Hey everyone, what is up? What's going on? Happy New Year. Welcome to 2019. It's your girl Lo, aka Lauren Espejo, and this is the You Had Me at Yellow podcast. If you're new here, or if you've been around the block a few times, you will know that this is the podcast where Asian Americans can come to air it all out. In this episode, I have my guest Erin. She is the founder of the blog called Coffee Meets Polished. And it is a forum that embraces all facets of our identity, from our first coffee of the day to our more polished selves. So I can definitely relate to that. I definitely need my cup of joe in the AM before I can be more me. So yeah, we talk about her journey to like her official training and like how she decided her own path. And we talk about, you know, finding your own path and self-love and all that great stuff. So without further ado, here is my convo with Erin, and I hope you enjoy. See you in a bit. So I guess we can start by you giving a little intro to yourself, like who you are, what you're into, what you're about.
Yeah, so my name's Erin. I am a pharmacist by training. Kind of my day job. And then I write content on the side. So I have a blog called Coffee Meets Polished, and it's about embracing who you are to get what you want. So I talk a lot about things about identity, embracing your needs like self-care, embracing your own path in life. And that kind of stems with a lot of the topics that I wanted to talk about with your heritage, how you were raised, and and things like that. So I'm really interested in identity politics, women's rights, and finding your own path in life.
Awesome. So how did you come up with the name Coffee Meets Polished?
So Coffee Meets Polished is really about embracing who you are from your first cup of coffee in the day to your polished self. So coffee really representing that moment when you wake up, fresh face, right out. It's just who you are in the morning. That's time for you. It's your internal self. And it's that mindful time where you don't have any external pressures. It's just a lot more of a pure part of your identity. And then the polished part is the part that the world has to see, that you interact with the world. You can't just be one in yourself. You still have to present in a certain way. And that can be of your choosing, but it still is a more polished version of who you are. So Coffee Meets Polished is that internal self meeting your external self and embracing the whole spectrum.
Oh, awesome. That sounds great. So when did you like create your blog, and what inspired you to do it?
I actually started a year ago as of last week. I had just finished my pharmacy residency training. So, you know, pharmacy training, for those that don't know, is 4 years of pharmacy school after college, and then an optional 1 to 2 years of residency. And so I did 2 years, and after so many years of school and then really rigorous years of residency training, I realized coming out of it that I didn't spend a lot of time figuring out who I was. It was always go, go, go. Achieve, test after test, accomplishment after accomplishment. And for what? You know, that was a lot of the things that I was asking myself. I'm spending so much of my day, so much of my time on my career. And what is my career doing for me?
Right. Like you were on autopilot.
Exactly. And it was my comfort zone. But at the same time, it didn't afford me any sense of identity or agency for what I really wanted. I didn't even know what I wanted. And so it was a couple of things. I decided to move to New York City after residency for my first job. And that was intentional because I wanted to be in a place where life was happening right outside of my door.
Yeah.
Because if I knew if it wasn't, then I would just go back to my old habits of working all the time.
So where was your residency before you moved?
Was in North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Is that where you grew up?
I actually grew up in Florida, so I'm working my way up.
Yeah. That's funny.
I was in North Carolina for 6 years for school and residency. Mm-hmm. And moved up. And so I started the blog really as an outlet for a lot of the thoughts that I had, mm-hmm. that unbalance, you know, and development of boundaries.
Totally.
And things like that. And that's really how the blog came about.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. That's kind of the same way I came up with Yellow Ranger. It was just kind of like exploring my like Asian American heritage a little bit more and like wanting to have a platform where the community can kind of come together and just talk about literally anything that is part of our experience, just so we could share that with each other and like the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. It's something that I think I'm digging more deeply into, mm-hmm. just now. And I'm already, you know, 29, and I'm just starting to re-embrace that part of my identity that I had pushed away for so long, whether, and you know, on purpose or not.
Mm-hmm. So you grew up in Florida. What was that like in terms of like your Asian American identity? Like, did you have a community or like, what was that like?
So growing up, I did. So my parents are both Filipino, and they moved here. And so I was born here. And when I was growing up, you know, my family was really involved in the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. and that's where a lot of the community was for the Filipinos. And so my parents had a lot of the friends who were Filipino, and that became basically extended family.
Right.
But my friends, and I grew up eating the traditional Filipino food every night. And going to Filipino events, you know, everything is a celebration, a big celebration. Right. everything is an excuse to cook a lot of food and things like that. But outside of that, I didn't have a lot of friends at school that were Asian. Mm-hmm. And so I did a lot of code switching now that I think back, mm-hmm. Eating quote unquote American food when I'm out with my friends who are not Asian, and then code switching back to fully surrounded by Filipinos and knowing how to navigate that and just kind of going back and forth, but they never really met that much.
Right. I can see that. So was there a moment where you realized, oh, like the way I grew up is different from you?
Yeah, I think really it was when I moved out of the house for college. Mm-hmm. And it was because I didn't really join the Asian American organizations or the Filipino American organizations. Mm-hmm. I never have dated an Asian man, a Filipino man, and Caucasian. And so really it was when I left the house and started living my own day to day that I realized that I'm not really actively being Filipino, living the Filipino culture on my own when I have the choice. And so I came to realize that. And especially now, you know, my partner is not Filipino, and I'm realizing, you know, if we were to have a family, it would really be up to me to make sure that culture is still alive.
Oh, totally. I can kind of relate to what you were saying before, how you didn't really have any Asian organizations like at school and college and all that. Cause I mean, there was a Filipino association, but I tried it. And since I was an art major, I didn't really fit in with everybody because everyone was, you know, either in some sort of like super smart major something medical, like pharmacy and all that kind of stuff, which is awesome. But I had totally different schedules from them and totally different workloads. And so it didn't really work out, and it was kind of like, oh, but I'm trying to find like the people who I think I'm like and or who I want to be around, you know? So I can relate to that where it's like you're trying to find yourself in the whole equation.
Yeah, because, you know, you come to realize there's a comfort level with being around people that look like you.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, for a long time growing up, I like I mentioned, I didn't have Asian friends or even Filipino friends that much. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't even see my own color.
Mm.
And so it wasn't until even coming to New York and seeing so much of the diversity.
Right.
Where I don't feel like I'm a minority, that I'm realizing how outside I felt now that I'm here in New York. And that just kind of helped, it has empowered me to embrace it even more and think, was I trying subconsciously to assimilate to, you know, non-Asian stereotypes on purpose to fit in? Or was I somehow ashamed of it? I don't know. That's kind of the journey I'm on right now.
I can see that. So what would you say is one of the biggest differences, I guess, with what the Asian community looks like in terms of like growing up in the South and like now being in New York?
Well, it has been interesting. So Florida and North Carolina were very different. Florida really wasn't Southern culture where I was in Florida. Mm-hmm. And so there was definitely a culture shock when I went to North Carolina, which is the South.
Gotcha.
There was a lot more curiosity of what I, quote unquote, what I was. I got a lot more questions than I ever did when I was in North Carolina about my ethnicity. And, you know, they would never use that word. They would just ask, you know, what are you or where are you from? And I'd say, well, I'm from Florida. And then there was always the follow-up.
Yep. The infamous question.
Yeah. And I even had someone ask, well, but where are your ancestors from?
Oh my God.
Like, where are yours from? I don't understand.
That's what I was going to say. Like, what about you? You want to show me your family tree?
it was so much more, people felt so much more curious or even entitled to the information. And, you know, I there were some people that I just wouldn't give in and say, well, I'm from here. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm in New York, I don't get those questions. If I do get those questions, it's because it's, I would say actually a lot more Hispanics ask me that question.
Oh yeah.
Any other ethnicity. And I find that it's because I'm a similar color.
Right.
Skin tone.
I can relate to that.
Yeah. And yeah. So I find that people here don't, either they know not to ask or they don't care, which is great.
I think it's both for sure.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Like, I've gotten a lot of like stuff from Spanish people just because of my last name. It means mirror in Spanish. So they're just confused. They're like, how could you not be Spanish? And I feel like that's part of being Filipino, though. Like, they want to say that you're Asian, but they just can't put their finger on it, you know?
Absolutely.
I always get, actually, in the past 2 weeks, I've gotten this. Like, I've gotten in an Uber or a Lyft. And the driver's just straight up like, are you Indian? I'm like, what? Like, I just, what? So I get that a lot. But yeah, I can totally relate to just that whole what are you question. I feel like every person of color gets that somehow, because it's like you couldn't possibly be American just because you don't look white.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I have a blog post called Not That Asian. And it was inspired because whenever I am part of a conversation and something's mentioned that I'm Asian, I automatically say, well, I'm not that Asian.
Oh, really? Why do you think that is? Like, you're...
Well, when I thought about it a lot, one, it's because I don't believe that as a Filipino, even, that we blend into the stereotype that's created here that is like Southeast Asian, like Chinese, Japanese, Vietnamese, and things like that. And I actually read this book recently called The Latinos of Asia.
Ah, yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, I just finished reading it. Highly recommend, by Anthony Christian Ocampo. And it talks a lot about why Filipinos here in America are distinctly different and why. And so gave me a lot of the vocabulary that, you know, you mentioned that you've been feeling, and a lot of it is a result of the, you know, Spanish rule and then subsequently the American colonization, which helped Filipinos learn English so that when they immigrate to the US, they have the Spanish influence but also the American influence, and it allows them to assimilate even more quickly. And they don't need to create a little Manila or anything like that in order to speak to each other and thrive. They can integrate anywhere. And so that's another reason why I feel like we have such a distinct identity from other Asian ethnicities.
Facebook. Yeah, I agree. I definitely will check it out. I feel like, well, it's exactly what you said. Most people have this idea of Asians just being East Asian and looking East Asian. And although our cultures has some similarities with those cultures or like subcultures of Asian American identity, like it's very much like I always say, like Filipinos have such a mixture of cultures that like we're kind of like a melting pot. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So I can relate to a Mexican person because, you know, they were also colonized by Spain, but they also have those same sort of Catholic like bits of culture, you know, in terms of like being Catholic and having like even the statue of like baby Jesus. I was like, wait, you guys have that too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just even food too. It's like certain things are just straight up, you can't deny that there's like Spanish influence in it, and then our names. So it's definitely, I always, if someone is confused about like my last name or like why Filipinos look differently or whatever, I just say, hey, like we were conquered by Spain for a good 300 years. Like we picked some stuff up.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah. Like even certain words, and that's why it was so easy for me to pick up Spanish. Like I took it in high school and then in college.
Yeah.
And I found myself trying to sort of figure out Filipino culture through through the Spanish influence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know why it didn't occur to me that I should, if I wanted to learn more about the Philippines, like I should be in some sort of like Asian studies program.
Yeah.
But I kind of always learned about the Philippines through textbooks in high schools and stuff, through how they mentioned Spain. You know what I mean? So I always kind of just leaned towards that. And I even minored in Spanish, just trying to find more about our culture. And it's just another way how I kind of internalized that, like, yeah, Filipinos are not that type of Asian, but we are. I only started embracing that more recently.
Same.
Yeah, because I've seen like actresses like Mindy Kaling and all that kind of stuff. It's just like brown Asians do exist. And I feel like it's kind of coming up more often in the conversation. And so it's just another thing where Asian American, that term is like, there's so many different cultures under that umbrella term that I feel like it's being redefined all the time.
It is. And you really also have to reflect on who created that category, who created that
mm-hmm.
label.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
So there's a reason why we feel like square pegs and round holes, because the pegs weren't made for us, you know?
Right. Totally. I've even had some followers like say, I don't consider myself Asian-American. Like, I am Asian and I'm also American. Like, that's it. I'm like, okay, that's a thing.
Oh, totally. I actually, you know, my blog post on feeling not that Asian was inspired by a Huffington Post article, and I can send that over, about how she feels firmly in the middle between being Asian and being American, and that Asian American is truly its own category where you have a blend of the
two. For sure.
And I thought that was really, really impactful to embrace.
Yeah. And I'm sure you can relate to the whole, like, because I've been to the Philippines, and going over there, you feel too American.
Yes.
And not Filipino enough. And then when you're here, if you don't speak the language, or you know, you don't know certain things.
Absolutely. You hear
to other people, wow, you're really Filipino, like you're really in it, you know?
Yeah, it's never, you never feel like you fit either in either part of the pendulum. And it's even harder for me here because I am 100% Filipino, but mm-hmm. I speak Tagalog.
Right.
And so people who are Filipino will identify that by looking at me. And then no matter where I am, I know that if someone sees me in the metro or on the street
mm-hmm.
room, they'll say, oh, are you Filipino? Where are your parents from? When was the last time you were in the Philippines?
Right.
And then it's speaking me in Tagalog. And then I have to say, sorry, I don't understand. And I hate that.
Yeah, totally. I definitely get that, because it's like it's almost a test, right? To see how assimilated you are in American culture, but at the same time to see, like, almost in a way, like how your parents raised you, you know, like if they spoke to you in Tagalog and all that stuff. So it's definitely tricky, because I remember even getting into this debate with my parents, like the whole thing where if, let's say my parents were at home eating dinner and I came home, and the first thing that they do is offer me, oh, do you want to eat? Like, did you eat yet? Even if they know I came from a dinner, or they know that I just came from a place where I ate food, they made the claim that it's a very Filipino thing to do to invite someone to eat. And so one time me and my brother didn't do that right away. Like, my parents came home after us and we had already been eating, and we didn't automatically like offer them to eat. It was just more of like greeting first, and then I'm sure it would have come up. But they made this claim that, oh, that you're not Filipino because you didn't do that. And we're like, how could you just write off, like, it's literally in our blood, like you created us and you're denying we're not Filipino because of this one thing, you know?
I totally identify that. In the book that the Latinos of Asia, he calls it a litmus test. Mm-hmm. Certain things are, like you said, did I pass the test? You know, when I go to a place, I don't bless the hands of the mm-hmm. those my elders, and I feel like that's something that's, you know, looked down upon sometimes, or I almost feel like I'm not representing my family well because I'm not doing those traditional things in order to maintain that sense of Filipino culture. So I totally empathize with you feeling like you're not passing the test in some sort of way of how you're supposed to be as a Filipino.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting what you were saying before about like carrying on traditions, like if you were to have kids and like all that kind of stuff. I think about that as well, because like the older we get, like I'm around the same age as you, and I feel like the older we get, you realize like, oh, if I don't speak Tagalog to them, then they won't know it. Because my parents came here when they were teenagers, so of course they still speak Tagalog, but they also speak a ton of English. Like, mm-hmm. So just thinking about that kind of stuff, like what traditions would I want them to have growing up? Because my partner also isn't Filipino. So just having them have that mixed identity, I would want them to still be proud, you know, like what sort of tradition should I carry over? You know what I mean? And thinking about that too, is a lot of the traditions are stemming from the Catholic identity. So if I were to, let's say, not necessarily raise my kids in the Catholic faith, what does that look like, you know?
Absolutely. Now, I'm curious, is your partner Catholic?
He grew up Catholic, but I wouldn't say he is now.
Okay. Same with mine. He wasn't raised Catholic, and I am not really currently practicing.
Yeah.
That's another topic for another, but it's something that definitely also I think about, because the rest of my family is very deeply rooted in the church.
Mm-hmm, same here.
So I feel almost like a black sheep in the family because I didn't embrace it as much as they have. Mm-hmm. And definitely when I think about the traditions and culture that I want to impart on the next generation, I find it really difficult to separate Catholicism with the Filipino culture.
It's true. Yeah, and I agree with you.
I talk about that with my partner all the time because it's really hard. But there are a couple of things that I definitely would want. I definitely want, you know, my potential future children to address their elders like tita and tito and lola and lolo and
yeah.
Well, yeah, I definitely want those things.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good one.
Yeah, and then the food. But the problem is I don't cook the food, so I need to learn.
I know. I feel like I know maybe like one or two dishes if I had to do it.
Yeah,
definitely the food and the respect for the elders. But like you said, a lot of the traditions that we do are surrounded by Catholicism. So it's so interesting to me.
It is. And I just recently decided that I want to go back to the Philippines someday when I have enough money and to take my partner with me.
Yeah.
And someday go on that journey over there and really go by myself. I've only been with family when I was young.
Uh-huh.
And I think that'll really help.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's definitely life-changing. I went for the first time when I was 17. And it really made me put everything into perspective. Like, what are the things that I'm worrying about? They're nothing. You know what I mean? Because I kind of saw both worlds. So you, like, you see how the wealth is distributed. And it's just like, why am I so concerned with these superficial things? Like, these people are happy with way less. Like, that's how I should be.
Yeah, on my dad's side of the family, he grew up on a farm in the valley. Mm-hmm. And so they live off the land. They're happy with, you know, the most simple things, and they embrace such a simple life. So I definitely want to go over there to just kind of reset and recheck my priorities.
Yeah, for sure. So you said you've gone before with your family. Like, have you gone a couple of times? Or?
Yeah, so I went when I was in elementary school and then once when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have. And since I was like 15.
Yeah.
So I remember it. And I remember feeling different, like you had mentioned, like too American. But I would love to go again now on my own and see what that's like.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you. I feel like it would definitely be like another like transformative experience where you get to kind of see the Philippines through your lens instead of like, you know, what your parents' itinerary was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I can feel that. So you said you were raised here. What did your parents come here from the Philippines, or were they also like sort of raised here?
So my parents came. My dad came here after he graduated college
mm-hmm.
from the University of Philippines, and he got his master's degree and PhD here in the U.S.
Oh,
and
cool.
So my mom, and so they arrived here when they were older, in their 20s, and then they had me. So they definitely had a significant part of their life in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
They've been here now for the past almost 30 years, if wow. not half years. So I like to think my parents are a lot more progressive compared to maybe other Asian American parents or Asian parents.
Yeah.
They allow us a lot of freedom to figure out what we wanted. They definitely put pressure on me. And it kind of goes into the other topic that I had mentioned about discovering my own motivation, because my parents pushed in certain ways so much, but they never said not, especially once I left the house, essentially they really let go and allowed me to figure out who I was once I actually left the house. And I think that's less common amongst Asian parents.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I feel like my parents, it's the same thing. They've been here longer than they've been to the Philippines. And, you know, the Philippines has changed so much since they were growing up. So they definitely relate more to America.
Yeah,
more than anything else. So I feel like that kind of influenced their parenting too, where it's like, yeah, of course, they still wanted to make sure we were good and were like on me about certain things, like getting an education and, you know, just being on point. But like you said, they're definitely still flexible in terms of like, okay, who does she want to be, you know?
I'm curious, is there any feedback about your degree in art versus the sciences and things like that?
Yeah, I definitely got some, not from my parents, I don't think. I think for my mom, it was more like, okay, you want to pursue art, but what's a way that you can make money doing it, you know? And I was lucky to have a graphic design program in my high school. And that's when I first started learning like all the, you know, Photoshop and Illustrator and all those programs on the computer. And I saw, wow, like this is a whole world where I could like have a career in this. So once I showed that to my mom and said, hey, like, I'm not really a fine artist. I'm not going to be here painting all day, but this is something I'm passionate about. And once they saw like it could actually be a thing, I think they signed on for it. But I did have family members that were like, oh, you're not going to make any money doing art. You should just do nursing. You should just do something else. Like, that's not a good route to go on and blah, blah, blah. And I'm the kind of person when someone tells me no, I just want to prove to them that I can, yeah. You know? So, of course, it hurt, like, coming from your family, like, dang, I guess you don't support my decision. But at the same time, it was just like, okay, but let me show you that I can do it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's interesting now that I've finished my training in my career, I realized so much that, you know, my parents did the best that they could in pushing me towards all that they really knew.
Yeah, of course. To fulfill the
dream and be quote unquote successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, going through all that, I don't regret it. I hate the loans that I have, but I think that if I had the diversity of experience, I don't know if I would have chosen what I'm doing today.
Like, what would you have chosen? Do you have an idea?
I'm really not sure. I mean, growing up, I was really into, played the cello for a long time, all through college. So I have that art side of my brain that I like to use. But, and then I also like to write. That's where I started the blog. I felt like I finally had time and decided to prioritize that kind of outlet. And so I'm really not sure what would have stemmed from that. But it's interesting now when I see with tech and all the jobs in tech and all the industries that are changing and innovating because of tech, I wonder if sometimes I feel like I've lost time jumping into things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm forged into this path that I'm kind of stuck in for the time being. But I don't know. It's tough to say what I would have wanted to be instead.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wonder if my parents or the friends that were around me really pushed me towards one way and had blind spots and the rest of it.
Yeah, so it's for sure.
Opportunity to shop around a little bit.
Yeah, I could kind of see that. I feel like I learned pretty early on that, like, of course you want to make your parents proud and you don't want to like disappoint them with what you're doing. Like, college is a really big deal and your career is a really big deal in that. But I kind of realized, like, wait a minute, this is still my life though. Like, I can do what my parents want me to do, but it's not their life. So if I'm not happy with those decisions, then that's going to really be on me at the end of the day.
Yeah, I wish I had come to that realization a lot younger.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you're just like, you know, we were raised to just listen to your parents. They know what's best for you. And, you know, if they got me up until this far, then I should listen to their guidance going forward, you know? So, yeah, it's a struggle. Yeah, but I think it's really cool that, like, you're sort of trying to find your way, like, through your blog and just, like, with empowerment, like, through your own stories and, like, sharing it with other people. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I feel that sharing stories is really one of the most powerful things that you can do, because it shows people that, one, you're not alone, and two, you learn from other people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's where with the blog, I like to share things that might be a little more taboo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a blog post about my family planning journey. And that's something that, you know, being raised Catholic, I've found it has really been a part of my inspiration with women's rights, because I feel like there's so much patriarchy in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, absolutely. And
a lot of suppression of women's sexuality that now that I'm a little bit more distanced from it and see a lot more of the consequences of that now that I'm older, I want to talk a lot more about things like birth control, all the different ones that I went through and why I switched to an IUD, and the fact that I've used Plan B pill.
Mm-hmm. That's so crazy. Like everything you're saying, I'm like, yep, did that.
Exactly. Talk about it, especially if you're people of faith, because it is something that is hush hush that you're not supposed to talk about. And that makes me so sad, especially as a healthcare professional now. Mm-hmm. And with all of the, you know, politics going on right now, there's just so much that needs to continue to be voiced, especially in a culture that is so ingrained with the Catholic Church. I just find it so important to share stories like mine and yours and everyone else's, that it's okay to talk about these things. In fact, it needs to be talked about so that other women can feel the agency over their own bodies. And I that's another thing that I'm really passionate about, that I think is rooted a lot as well in the religious values that I grew up with.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that, where it's just like what you were raised in, and then the world that you kind of discover outside of that doesn't necessarily line up. And you start seeing like the discrepancies and like the inconsistencies in between the two. So I can totally get that, because it is very hush hush. Like, I remember talking to someone like, did you ever have like the sex talk and with your parents? And I was like, not really. It was more just like, don't do it. Don't do it, or you'll become pregnant and it will be very embarrassing for you and all this kind of crap. And it's just like, but wait, what if I'm not trying to get pregnant out here, but I mean, like, sex is a thing.
Yeah. I love my mom so much. And she, again, raised me with what she knew. And I remember my sex talk essentially was, if you get pregnant, don't get an abortion. I will raise that child.
Oh, wow.
And so I knew where she was on that spectrum. And then, at least back then, this was when I was in middle school, probably, or early high school. Mm-hmm. And secondly, when my mom found out that I had sex for the first time, it was while I was in high school, she took me to church to go to confession.
Oh, wow.
And so that's a story that I share, because it just kind of shows how that can really shape someone and how they believe in their own sexuality.
Wow. Yeah, totally.
And it wasn't even something that my mom was, she wasn't angry. I think she was shocked.
That's just how she knew how to deal with it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I
think, me being the oldest, it was her first time really knowing how to parent it, I guess.
Totally. And
the first reaction was, we're going to church. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. And the weird thing too is that, I know it's part of what they want for us, but I was never really told like, oh, sex is something that only happens within the confines of marriage. It was just always like, don't do it, you know? So I wasn't even taught like, okay, then when is the right time, or, you know what I'm saying? So it was just all a whole big question. And all I really learned from sex is from like sex ed in school and like my friends. And like, obviously the whatever was on the TV at the time. And like that whole experience. I remember one time I was sleeping over at my cousin's house, and this is when TGIF was a really big deal.
Yeah.
And there was this show and he was talking about a condom. And we were like, what is that? You know, we're looking at each other like, what is he talking about? And so we straight up go to my uncle and we're like, what's a condom? And he freaks out and he's just like, what are you guys talking about? Like, what are you watching? Like, turn that off. And we're still don't know what it is. And this was before Google. So we're just like, what? He just got mad at us and we don't even know what we're talking about here. Like, so yeah, like little things like that. It was kind of just like, we're not going to talk about it, but we expect you to be responsible. Yeah.
And then, you know, you're growing up and you grow up with strict parents who you can't date, or you can only do this when you date. Don't have sex, don't get pregnant. And then all of a sudden it's the next day and you're like, when are you getting married? When are you having sex? acids. And I'm like, wait a minute, where did this switch come from?
That's what I'm saying. My aunt has definitely asked me, like, when are you going to give your mom some grandkids? And I'm like, what? Like, hello, first of all, hi, happy Thanksgiving, nice to see you.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Family.
I know. So to, like, sort of wrap up, is there anything that you want to plug coming up? And, like, where can people find your blog and find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on my website. It's coffeemeetspolished.com. I'm also on Instagram at coffeemeetspolished and on Twitter at coffeemmpolished.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find me all on there, as well as some links to my current publications on the blog through Instagram. I'm always on Instagram stories, sharing life in New York City.
So awesome.
Yes, I'm trying to share a lot more of that. I'm also super into podcasts, so I'm super excited for yours to listen to all the other episodes.
Thank you.
So I'm really in, I would say the top two things that come through my Instagram stories are what I'm currently listening to on the pod, as well as New York City life. So
awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for sharing your story. I'm sure so many other people can relate to your experience. Thanks again for being on the podcast and being interested in your enthusiasm and all that.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. And, you know, I think that you're doing really great work sharing stories of our particular piece of the population pie. So I'm excited for you.
Thank you so much.
Hey, y'all. So that was my convo with Erin from Coffee Meets Polished. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. She was a really great guest. Really connected with her for sure. So I love to close out each episode with a little self-care / self-love tip, little tidbit. So for this one, I decided to talk about, I don't know if you've heard, but she's the latest craze right now. Her name is Marie Kondo. And she has a show called Tidying Up with Marie Kondo and on Netflix. And it's a pretty big deal. People have been like raving about it and all that kind of stuff. So if you haven't heard, go check it out. It's a really good show. If you love HGTV, if you love organizing, if you love getting your stuff together, if you like fixing up your house and all that good stuff, then you're gonna like this show. And something that I wanted to take from her and share on the podcast as like a self-care sort of tip is how she says that when you go through your stuff, right, when you're organizing your things and you're deciding like, should I keep this shirt, should I keep this candle, should I keep this pillow, or whatever the case may be in your house, whatever you are going through, whatever you're organizing, you have to ask yourself, does it spark joy? So you look at this item, let's say it's an old hoodie from your college days, and you look at it and you love this hoodie. It brings back so many memories. It still fits. It's a little bit soft because you've worn it for so many years, and it does bring you joy. Then guess what? Keep it. If it doesn't bring you joy, then she says to thank the item. So you thank the item and then you just let it go. So whether you donate it or you give it to somebody else, or whatever the case may be, you just thank it and you move on. So I love that. I think it's so important to recognize the value, you know, that we do put on our items and our belongings and things like that, and really thank them and be grateful for even having them if we're fortunate to have belongings and to have things that we cherish. It's important to note that and to really take a second and acknowledge it. So yeah, that's my self-care tip, it's not just yet time for spring cleaning, but if you want to go through, you know, your inside, you know, out from the cold or whatever, if you're here on the East Coast and you're just in at home, you know, snowed out maybe, go through your things, you know, pile up all those clothes on your bed and really go through it and say, does this spark me joy? Empty out that closet, that drawer that you just throw things in, and really go through these items and say, what can I really let go right now? So yeah, that's my little self-love tip. It's important to keep our surroundings serene and calm and nice. Thank you guys for listening, each and every one of you. I really, really love and respect each and every one of my listeners. So thank you so much for listening. And that was You Had Me at Yellow. Bye.